The 0-2. He got him. The throw down to first to finish it up, and Michael Tonkin with his second career save as the Yankees win this opener 4-2, the final.
Yankees beating the Royals there on Monday night to start out a four-game series at Kauffman Stadium. The Yankees moving to 47-21. The Royals falling to 39-21. More on the game coming up here momentarily. Also coming up here on the Sports Ticket, the College World Series field is set. Stanley Cup Finals continuing, and the Lakers are still searching for a head basketball coach as they were turned away by the one that they had given a decent offer to move out of the college ranks. So we'll talk about all that, and also with the Royals, we'll chat about the possibility of a move to Kansas. We'll see. Again, that's all coming up here on the Sports Ticket. Let's get you started here with the Royals. Again, they lost last night by a final 4-2. Never really did have the full comeback attempt going like they've had in some of the games here recently. They got down 4-0. New York got two in the top of the first to get things started, and didn't waste any time there, taking the lead on Seth Lugo, and then added two more in the fourth inning to take a 4-0 lead. And they kind of grinded out those runs there in the first and fourth. Two RBI, a single from Trevino, as the Yankees got up 4-0. And then the Royals did score one in the seventh on a RBI single from Freddie Fermin that scored Salvador Perez. And Dyron Blanco, pinch runner, scored on a double by Bobby Witt Jr. in the eighth as well. 4-2, again, the final score in that one. Last night in Kansas City, Seth Lugo on the mound. His last two starts haven't been the greatest. As you kind of look at his game log, he's allowed 9 runs over 13 innings over the last two starts after being virtually unhittable at times. Looking at his game log prior to that, he had, and during the month of May, he never had a game where he allowed more than 2 runs. And again, 5 against Cleveland, an 8-5 loss back on June 4th. And then 6 days later, last night, he gave up 4 runs on 8 hits, also had a walk in 7 innings. The good thing is he's still pitching deeper into games, saving the bullpen a little bit, but he did fall to 9-2 with the loss. 2.36 is his ERA. The low ERA on the season was in May at 105. Then he had a 4-run game on April, at 105. I'm not really counting the early part of the season where he's .0 and .71. After the first couple games there, but Seth Lugo, again, has had a couple in a row here where he's, again, struggled a bit. Threw 101 pitches last night, 98 in the game before that. Again, allowing 5 in the previous game, 4 last night as far as earned runs. All the runs that he allowed were earned. And he's also given up 14 hits over 13 innings here in the last two starts. So Lugo, some little struggles here, I would say, on the last two starts for the Royals. But obviously he's had an outstanding season overall and has shown the ability to be a very solid pitcher. Royals manager Matt Quatero on Lugo.
He just got in trouble. Just couldn't get off to get the swing and miss that he wanted with his breaking ball early. It got sharper as he went, but you know, you give him credit for putting the ball in play, and you know, they Trevino beat us pretty good today.
So again, I mentioned Trevino had the two RBI hit there in the fourth inning for the Yankees on their way to that 4-2 win. I don't think I'm in like a panic mode about Seth Lugo yet. Again, as I had mentioned, he's had a lot of success prior to the last two starts, so you know he's got the ability to do it, and he's proven that throughout his career as far as that's concerned as well. Looking at his career, he's got a 3.36 ERA, so I'm not overly worried about Seth Lugo at this moment in time, but it is worth noting that he has struggled a bit in the last two games, giving up 9 runs on 14 hits. So we'll keep an eye on Seth Lugo and see how he continues on here this season. The Royals will continue on with the Yankees. The Royals again now 39-28. They're 4.5 games behind the Guardians in first place. Cleveland's 42-22 in the American League Central standings. The Yankees again are 47-21. .691 winning percentage, which is just barely below the Phillies, who have the best record in baseball at 45-20. The Yankees still just 2.5 games ahead of the Orioles, though, in the AL East at 47-21. Baltimore's 43-22. Those are the only two winning records in the American League East. Again, Royals and Yankees will continue on. Game two of their four-game series will take place today. Tonight, actually, at 7:10. There at Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City, as the Royals will put on the mound Brady Singer, 4-2 with a 2.76 ERA, against Marcus Stroman of the Yankees, who's 5-2 with an ERA at 3.04. Yankees and Royals. Yankees, obviously, this is the stretch that I've been talking about for a bit for Kansas City here, and once June started, we knew that the schedule was going to get tough, and here's New York. Even on the road, they're favored to win these games for the most part against the Royals. So, again, the schedule has definitely gotten tougher for Kansas City. Those games against the Mariners were hard-fought games, and they won 2 out of 3. But, again, losing to the Yankees now, they've kind of come back down to earth a little bit after having that nice 8-game winning streak during toward the end of May there. Again, the Royals at 39-28. I said the game is taking place at Kauffman Stadium this evening for the Royals against the Yankees, and it's definitely going to be interesting to follow how long those games will take place at Kauffman Stadium. John Sherman, the Royals' majority owner, has been very clear that he wants to leave Kauffman Stadium, and the lease goes through 2031. So, again, there's been a lot of talk about where the Royals might end up. You know, obviously the Jackson County vote fell through to build the stadium downtown. So there's other options in different counties in the Kansas City metro area that they could go to. And one of the options is moving to Kansas. And the Royals yesterday said that, and this is coming from Royals Review, this is just where I found the story at, Max Reaper, we appreciate that. Royals say Kansas provides a path for us to explore in stadium discussions, and says they will look at crossing the state line. In Kansas legislature expected to convene next week for a special session to work on a tax cut bill, but lawmakers are also expected to consider changes to the Star Bonds program to attract major sports teams to the state, namely the Chiefs and Royals. According to Royals Vice President of Communications Sam Mellinger, the state provides another option in their quest for a new ballpark. As we'll now go to the KSHB out of Kansas City, which would be 41 News. Kansas City Royals exploring a potential home for the team's new ballpark. According to the Royal spokesperson, Sam Mellinger, he used to work at the Kansas City Star, but now he's the Vice President of Communications. He said, quote, as we've said since April 2nd, we must evaluate all options that may be available to us with respect to a new stadium. Unquote. Kansas legislature will hold that special session on June 18th, where legislatures are expected to propose making changes to that Kansas Star Bond program. Again, to attract major sports teams to the state, Star Bonds act as loans that assist developers building attractions. Kansas Representative Sean Tarwater says he will propose allowing Star Bonds to cover 75% of a project's cost rather than the current 50% cap. The proposal would also change investment minimums for Star Bonds applicants. The Royals need a place to play baseball in the near future, and the recent Star Bond discussions in Kansas provide a path for us to explore, is what Mellinger said. The Royals previously aimed to build a new ballpark in Kansas City, Missouri's Crossroads Arts District again, but the plans were halted in April when the voters rejected the renewal of the 3.8-cent sales tax that would fund stadium projects. So the Royals have come out publicly and said that they would be interested in this. Star Bonds are an economic development tool to finance major projects, as we said, and they were used to finance Kansas Speedway, Children's Mercy Park, Legends Shopping District, which transformed that area of Kansas City, Kansas, obviously. If you've been out there, if you've been to a race, if you've been to a Sporting KC game, whatever you've been to out there, there are plenty of people that just swing by. It's not hard to get to. It's not hard to drive around in, like you know, your downtown areas would be in Kansas City, Missouri. It's relatively easy to get to most places out there if you know what you're doing anyway. There's no, like, confusing one-way streets like when you're driving. I don't know if you've driven in downtown Kansas City, but it can be a mess sometimes. That's not just Kansas City, by the way. I've driven in a lot of downtown areas. Recently, driving in downtown Nashville, there's some of that action going on with one-way streets that you really got to be paying attention. Make sure your GPS is taking you the right ways if you're going there. Downtown Tulsa, I've driven in. Just a lot of these downtown areas have those one-way streets just to help with reducing accidents. Is what it's supposed to do, probably, but I don't know if it does. Because when I'm in downtown Kansas City driving around, I get confused quite a bit. So when you go out there to Legends, where the Kansas Speedway is, where Children's Mercy Park is, where the current baseball stadium is for the Kansas City Monarchs minor league baseball team, semi-pro baseball team, I guess you'd call it, it's not hard to get around out there. And there's a lot of room to build out there. And they're putting in a Buc-ee's out there. They've got a Whataburger out there. The place is turning into Texas out there is what it looks like. That's, I believe, where the Buc-ee's is supposed to go right now anyway. They may change that. I don't know. That's not, I don't think, set all the way in stone, but that is the current plan as to where they're going to build that. So that place, that area out there by Legends and Children's Mercy Park, Kansas Speedway, continues to grow, but there's a lot of room to grow still in that area. So again, these star bonds are what have helped build, again, Kansas Speedway, Mercy Park, Children's Mercy Park, Legends Shopping District, and much more there in that area. So Kansas lawmakers, again, considering the changes that could allow 75% to be covered, and also Kansas City Royals have put together lobbyists to its lineup, reflected in the public record by the Kansas Secretary of State. And so there'll be, it looks like, around 10 or 11 people, or 8 people, actually, that'll be on the Kansas City Royals group that'll be at that meeting. So again, that's on June 18th where the Kansas lawmakers will meet, and it's gonna be interesting to just to see how this plays out. Much of the talk from Kansas officials has been in regards to the Chiefs rather than the Royals. That Kansas State Senator J.R. Clay said the bonds would fund $1.5 billion to $2 billion development plan for a new Chiefs stadium. No location has yet been determined there, although many speculate it would be near the Legends project at I-435 and I-70. So again, this is kind of what we're looking at, but apparently there's Kansas has been added to the Royals possibilities as well, and Sam Mellinger reflected that. I'm interested to see how it all plays out, because I do think that, I mean, selfishly, whenever it just, it's inevitable that it happens, like around the country, when Kansas City wins, everybody just assumes Kansas City, the name is Kansas City, that they're in Kansas, and they're not. They're in Missouri, and if the people from Missouri will let you know about that on social media or whatever it might be. So, personally, I think it'd be funny if they could stop claiming that and being so adamant about it, and we could be like, nah, actually, they're in Kansas now. These are our teams now. That's the petty part of it, right? But in all reality, if Kansas can make it work, man, how, listen, you look at it like, so the plan was for the Royals to build a downtown stadium and build a district around that, whether it's downtown or whether it's out in Cook County, North Kansas City, other areas. The plan is to build the stadium and also build a district kind of around that. I tell you what, if you can put a proposal and a plan together, your district is already built at Legends. And you could just continue to grow what you have already out there. I mean, there's shopping. There's all kinds of different food out there. There's all kinds of entertainment out there already with other sports. Again, like we said, with soccer, with and I don't know how a Royals move out there would affect the Kansas City Monarchs baseball club, the semi-pro team. I don't know if that would effectively end their tenure out there. I don't know why it needs to if you build it in a different spot, but Royals and Chiefs and or Chiefs, I guess I should say, no matter what, man, if you build out there and put something new, which I don't think the Chiefs, by the way, I don't think they're going to end up in Kansas. I think I still, if I was going to bet on this, I would still say that they're going to stay right in the area that they're at. Whether that means a huge renovation to Arrowhead Stadium and then blowing out Kauffman Stadium once the Royals leave there, or whether that is just completely, you know, once you blow out Kauffman Stadium, maybe you build a new upscale grade Arrowhead Stadium on the other side of that and then take your own out. And then you have all that parking in that area or whatever you want to do to build kind of your own district out there where, again, it's easier access, but you'd want a lot more amenities out there if you're just like the lone tenant. More places to eat, entertainment, motels, just shopping, obviously, would you'd want that to be a part of all that. Tailgating is obviously bigger in football, so you're going to have an area where you're going to do that too, and you don't want to take that away probably. I think that area for the Chiefs is where they're going to stay. I've always felt that, and I don't think that's going to change. So I really feel like Kansas, if they want to be proactive about this and actually do want a pro sports team in their state, the Royals are probably actually the way to go here, because the Royals can stay in Kansas City in the area. They've got investors from Kansas and Missouri that are part of their ownership group. Obviously, John Sherman is a majority owner and will probably make a lot of the decisions of how that will go. But clearly, there's a lot of stakeholders in the Royals with the group that bought them from David Glass when that whole transaction went down. So, again, there are a lot of reasons for the Royals to play in Kansas or Missouri. I don't think that they need to be tied to any certain state, any certain area, any certain district. I think they do. The group that owns them would want to stay in the Kansas City metro. I don't think that they would want to move to a different city. With the people that have the interest invested in this team, John Sherman would probably be like the only one that I'd be concerned actually about moving the team out of the city. And of course, he is the majority owner, so that's obviously always going to be a possibility. But the Royals would probably be the direction you'd want to go if you're Kansas and looking for a team. So you could do so much out there. Again, there's so much already built in for the Royals as far as the entertainment district, it's Legends District, basically shopping. Everything's out there. You've been there, you know what I'm talking about. There's plenty of places to shop. There's movie theaters. There's all kinds of sporting events going on and just so much to do out there. And it's not hard to access. It's not difficult to get there. It's right off I-70. And 435, the two main interstates that are going through the Kansas City metro. Obviously, you're on the western side of 435, and you're on I-70, which is going east-west no matter what, no matter where you're going. I think it's kind of imperative to be fairly close to that. And if you can be close to that, it's going to be a lot easier to get out of there and in and out. I know NASCAR races sometimes are difficult to get in and out. There's more people at a NASCAR race, I promise, than will be at a Friday night, Saturday night, even the most popular Royals games. So, it's all right there. You get done with the game, you go have a drink or get some food, whatever you do. I don't know what everybody is going to do after a game, but you have an opportunity to do that right away instead of having to drive somewhere. And that's what I think one of the most aggravating things when you're leaving a Royals game at night is like, okay, where do I stop to eat? Because there's nothing around here. And then you're also wondering, where's a safe place for me to stop and eat sometimes too? That's just the way it is, right? And so you don't know all that. And if you're out of Legends, you're going to the game, I had fireworks Friday, we'll just use an example of a Friday night, and then now you want to go get something to eat. Well, this is where I'm at, and I'm going to run over here. Even if you got to get in your car and drive somewhere, you're fine. A lot of the ideal things are, I remember when we went to the Sporting KC game, we literally just walked out of the stadium and went to an eating establishment that was right around there. And it was a walk. It was not a get in your car, drive, go find something to eat. It was, let's walk over here and get something to eat before we leave and go home for the night. So that's the positives of having a district that you're in and having all kinds of amenities there to take advantage of. And, boy, that's built already. And if Kansas can get whatever, 75% of that covered by the Star Bonds that we mentioned earlier, I mean, that would be – it's there for you already, and it's a lot less hassle and work trying to find out where and how you're going to build this district. Again, you can build even more around it. let's say you're building the stadium and it's not within walking distance of some of the eating establishments or places you might want to go when you're done with the game, build more around there and walk out and go there. And they'll figure it all out. There's plenty of room out there to build even more. It continues to grow, to be completely honest with you out there. And so it'd be perfect if this would be in Kansas and out at Legends in that area around Kansas Speedway, Hollywood Casino. And, you know, it's legal to bet in Kansas now. You can place a bet at Hollywood Casino, go watch the game, right? There's a lot of positives of the way that sports are going right now and the professional ranks of moving a team out to Legends here in the state of Kansas. So I'll be interested to see how it all plays out. But the Royals obviously are listening because they have to listen. The Chiefs, again, I think that they've got the ownership that could front and put up the money, more money than what they had initially promised during the vote, the sales tax vote there in Jackson County. I think the Chiefs are going to end up putting up more money than what they said. Like I've said multiple times, I think they were kind of just throwing a bone to the Royals and putting their names in the hopper just to see if they could get that thing passed, and the Royals were glad to have the Chiefs attached to that. If the Chiefs weren't attached to that, the blowout victory for no probably would have even been higher, right? There were not a lot of people at that moment in time wanting to support the Royals. Now, timing might be pretty big, too, because the Royals are obviously winning now. You're coming off of a 106-loss season or whatever it was last year, and then trying to vote to increase the sales or keep a sales tax in or whatever it might be to build a new stadium downtown in an area that people really don't even – I mean, I don't think a lot of people in Kansas City want the baseball stadium downtown, because downtown's a disaster enough the way it is. It keeps growing up instead of out. They just build up and up and up in the downtown part of KC. So I think that factored into it as well. But the state of the Royals of being a triple-digit loss team did not help that vote. So the Royals having the Chiefs kind of attached to their hip on that actually might have helped them get even more votes than they would have, and it still got blown out of the water as a no vote, and we're not going to approve this sales tax. So, again, the Chiefs, I think, are pretty well set in that location at Arrowhead Stadium at the Truman Sports Complex, but I could see the Royals easily going somewhere else. And, again, Sam Mellinger, who's the Vice President of Communications for the Royals, has said that they'll be looking anywhere they can for the new ballpark. It could be in Missouri, it could be in Kansas, and man, I would be ecstatic. I love Kauffman Stadium. It's so nice to go there, and it's a great place. It's well documented that there's not enough stuff around it after the game, like I just said, of trying to figure out where you might want to eat or go after the game's concluded when you're heading out of town. But the location of the ease of getting there and leaving and not being congested in downtown traffic is outstanding. And I think you could replicate that ease of getting there out at Legends and not have to worry about all that other stuff. And you also have places to eat, places to go, places to shop before the game if you want to make a day of it, and go to the game and come out of the game and eat instead of spending all the money while you're in the stadium on food and things like that. I think Legends is doing very well economically already, right? But what a unbelievable boost that would give to them out there too, and to the state of Kansas. We know that the Royals are leaving Kauffman Stadium eventually, and if I had a choice of where I'd like to see them go, selfishly, absolutely Legends. It's closer. It's on the Kansas side, obviously. You don't have to travel as far to get into Missouri and go to downtown Kansas City or where, especially North Kansas City, if you would go there. I've been out there. It takes a bit to get to some of those places. So, selfishly, yeah, Kansas would be great. And then we could, you know, rub it in the face of the Missouri people that just always are like, they're not from Kansas, they're from Missouri, they're our team. Well, we could change that if the Royals would move out there. So that'd be great for me. Interesting that the Royals have had somebody publicly come out and say that they are, won't say interested, but obviously looking at all options here to move their team from Kauffman Stadium after 2031. So obviously this is something we'll continue to follow, but the Royals do say that Kansas could provide a path for them to explore in stadium discussions. Bad news for the Royals before we move on. Meant to cover this before I talked about the stadium thing, but Royals outfielder Hunter Renfroe fractured his left big toe when he fouled off two pitches from New York Yankees left-hander Carlos Rodon in the third inning Monday night. Matt Cotero said after the game that he had it in a cold tub trying to take away some of the pain. He fouled off seven pitches in all before striking out in a 12-pitch at bat. Fouled the fourth pitch, a curveball off the toe, and fell to one knee and grimaced. He walked around in foul territory by the backstop, then stepped back into the batter's box after 45 seconds. Two pitches later, he fouled another curveball off of his foot, dropped away from the box. He felt the toe and got back in the box about 40 seconds later. And Cotero said Renfroe told him he thought the first foul was actually what caused the broken toe. And after striking out, he went to right field in the fourth inning, but removed at the start of the fifth. Cotero said he went down to the cage trying to move around a little bit. He was out there, came back in, and they got him to take his shoe off, check it out, and he said he couldn't keep going. So Renfro's hitting 200 with six homers, 26 RBI, batting 363 with two homers and eight RBI in the last 10 games, though. A veteran of nine major league seasons and has been in the Royals lineup, so you expect Hunter Renfroe will not be part of this lineup for a bit here with the broken toe. We'll see how long it takes for him to get back onto the field for the Royals. 937 here on KD Country 94 on the Sports Ticket. It's brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. They're your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. And when we come back, we'll have more College World Series set. Also, the Stanley Cup Finals rolling on. And we will look at the head coaching vacancies in the NBA as the Lakers are still looking for a coach.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Hot weather is here. Is the air conditioning in your vehicle nice and cold? If not, we can help. We have the training and equipment to service vehicle AC systems of all types, including the new refrigerant and late model vehicles. We offer same-day service on air conditioning with no appointment necessary. So don't sweat it out. Give us a shout. Fast, friendly service for your air conditioner can be found at Kiever Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, or on the web at kieferbrothers.com.
Phelps, and he swings at the first, sends it to center. Serrano is back, and NC State's headed back to Omaha. Elliot Avance boys come on the road and take the Super Regional from Georgia.
There you go. Four ACC schools and four SEC schools in the College World Series. How boring is that? It's not. Listen, it is what it is, right? But I'm not, like, all excited about watching the College World Series now with four SEC and four ACC schools, not a single Big 12 school or Pac-12 school or Big 10 school. It's just all of the ACC and SEC. This should have been just an ACC-SEC invite, basically, as you look at it. College World Series is set, though, in Omaha. Things will get started coming up on Friday at 1 o'clock on ESPN. North Carolina will take on Virginia, who eliminated K-State in the Super Regionals over the weekend. And then at 6 o'clock on Friday night, Tennessee against Florida State on ESPN. And then Bracket 2 will get started on Saturday, 1 o'clock, where Kentucky will take on NC State. And then Texas A&M against Florida at 6 o'clock. So what you would ideally like to have happen here is, like, your teams from the ACC play the teams from the SEC, if you could just change it up. So you got an all-ACC matchup, North Carolina, Virginia, SEC against ACC with Tennessee against Florida State, SEC against ACC with Kentucky and NC State, and all-SEC with Texas A&M against Florida there in the final game there on Saturday. So College World Series is set, and again, things get underway on Friday and Saturday from Omaha at TD Ameritrade Park. And if you missed any of that, you can find the full bracket at NCAA.com. That's where you'll go. It's actually called Charles Schwab Field, my bad. I forgot they changed the name of it there in Omaha, Charles Schwab Field. Things start at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon. North Carolina 47-14, Virginia's 46-15, Tennessee's 55-12, Florida State 47-15, Kentucky's 45-14, NC State 38-21, Texas A&M is 49-13, and Florida, despite starting the postseason with a record of 28-27, is 34-28 going into the College World Series. A national championship will be on possibly ABC coming up next Saturday, June 22nd, Sunday, June 23rd, Monday, June 24th, if necessary. It'd be ESPN, ABC, ESPN for the College World Series National Championship Series. So they'll play through all of next week with the regular part of the tournament and get things started with the championship on Saturday at Charles Schwab Field in Omaha, Nebraska. So it's a look at the College World Series. We'll track that as it goes. Again, not a lot for us to care about or focus on because nobody's alive in the Big 12 anymore. So that makes it no fun, right? College World Series, NCAA.com for more info.
But did have the timeout in the middle of it. Bennett got tied up. That scores from Sarace! Aaron Ekblad, an empty net goal that will give Florida a three-goal lead.
Panthers went up 4-1 on that empty net goal late in the third period. They go on to win by the final of 4-1 over the Edmonton Oilers. The Florida Panthers have a 2-0 series lead. NHL.com will tell you everything you need to know about this series. Again, I'm not a guy that follows hockey, so I'm not well-versed on the sport and probably not the best person to be giving you updates on how hockey's going. But I think I saw a stat last night, 91% of the teams that get a 2-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Finals end up winning the championship. So the Florida Panthers have put themselves in a good spot here against the Edmonton Oilers to win the championship if they can continue on the path that they're on right now. Edmonton will be the site for Game 3 coming up on Thursday night at 7 o'clock, much like the NBA on a travel. They take basically 2 days off, and then the game is on the third day. So Tuesday, Wednesday off, and then back in Edmonton at 7 o'clock on ABC on Thursday night. NBA Finals won't be back on the court until tomorrow night as the Celtics have a 2-0 lead on the Mavericks. They'll be back in Dallas tomorrow night in the NBA. The tip-off at 7:30 there. As the Celtics look to take a commanding lead there on the Mavericks, they're up 2-0 right now. Again, I think hockey's probably a little different of the adage that Wade said yesterday and that we've kind of always said it's not really a series until the road team wins a game. I don't know that home court advantage or home ice advantage is much of a big deal in hockey. Sure, maybe the fans can get you charged up a little bit, but I'm going to say out of the major sports, I'm going to say that home ice might be on the bottom of the list. Home court in the NBA can be a great thing if you have the right home court advantage and the right fans, the right fan base. I've been at a playoff game in Memphis, and it was just wild and charged in that arena. And I think a lot of the arenas, you see that in the NBA, especially the deeper you get, the louder and charged the atmosphere does get. So I think home court advantage is a bigger thing there. I'm not saying it's the only thing, because obviously there have been a lot of home teams that have lost in the playoffs this year and then went on the road and won after they lost games at home. So, I mean, Nuggets and Timberwolves is a perfect example of that we talked about yesterday. So, be interesting to see how the hockey thing does play out. But in the NBA, if the Celtics win tomorrow night, then, I don't like the chances of the Mavericks. Obviously, nobody's ever come back from down 3-0 in the NBA playoffs in any series, and for sure not in the NBA Finals. So, we'll follow it all. NBA Finals again coming back up tomorrow. We'll preview Game 3 on the Sports Ticket tomorrow as well. We will stay in the NBA to wrap up the Sports Ticket. I want to make sure there's nothing new that's come out here before I wrap up with the NBA coaching carousel and what's going on there. The Indiana Fever. Lost to the Connecticut Sun yet again, 89-72. Connecticut led by as many as 28 points. Caitlin Clark had just 10 points, I believe, in that loss. Dejanay Carrington had 22 for the Connecticut Sun, who continued to play outstanding here to start the season. Caitlin Clark had 10 points all in the first half. She was 3 of 8 shooting. Just 3 turnovers, though. The Fever losing and their coach... Christy Sides said, "I'm going to start with how you can't at this level coach effort." I felt like we were just trying to ask him to be keep playing hard, play hard. You can't start there. You can't play in this league if you have to coach effort. It's just too hard. So she's obviously calling out the effort of her team in last night's game. The WNBA has set records in TV ratings and attendance. The first month of the WNBA season drew in its highest attendance since the league's second season in 1998 and the best television ratings in its history. The WNBA announced on Tuesday the figures are the latest evidence of surging popularity of the WNBA. Across ABC, ESPN, ESPN2, CBS, ION, and NBA TV, WNBA games are averaging 1.32 million viewers, nearly tripling last season's average of 462,000, the league said Tuesday. And this is coming from Coley Edison, the WNBA's chief growth officer. She says, what's happening now in women's basketball is confirmation of what we've always known. The demand is there. Women's sports is a valuable investment. We're encouraged by growing engagement across all of our verticals, especially as we welcome new and diverse audiences into our fandom. The WNBA continues to experience sustained growth as our league embraces this heightened momentum. The WNBA finished May having sold out more than half of its games, more than double the number of sellouts last year. Approximately 400,000 fans have attended games, the most through the first month in 26 years. Arenas have been filled at 94% capacity, a 17% rise from last year, the league said. So, listen, the story's going to slant. AP slanted the story already. I didn't read the part where it says, since it added prominent rookies, including Indiana's Caitlin Clark, Chicago's Angel Reese, and Los Angeles' Cameron Brink, all of whom drew big audiences playing in college. Eh. Did they, though? Did they all draw big audiences in college? I don't think they did. I'm not going to get into the conversation today, but these TV rating records, near record attendance, Caitlin Clark effect. Is what it is. I can't say it any more than I've already said it. So I'm not even going to go into the story or into the spiel or the argument, because it's just, it is what it is. And you can try to deny it all you want and frame stories however you want to make it sound like the entire rookie class is the reason for all this. I'm not going to buy what you're trying to sell me. Let's just put it that way. But WNBA ratings through the roof compared to some of the things that they've dealt with in the past. So you got to be happy for that. If you're the WNBA, for sure, no matter how it happened, you've got to be happy that your ratings are up. And I would also say you probably should take care of the person that helped get your ratings up. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right, we wrap the sports ticket here from Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. They're your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. Find them south of Courthouse there in Beloit. They sponsor the sports ticket, and we appreciate them for bringing it to you each weekday here on Katy Country 94. NBA draft and free agency just weeks away, and the L.A. Lakers are still looking for a new coach. Dan Hurley has turned down an offer to become the Lakers head coach, and he will stay at Connecticut. It was a 6-year, $70 million offer from the Lakers, according to sources that gave that info to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN. He'll return to go for a third national championship at UConn. Dan Hurley will. There was rumors out there, and I don't know if this is a real quote or if not quote, but a real thing, if somebody actually talked to him or if this was just made up. That's the bad thing about today's day and age in reporting and journalism, is that one person can say something and that can be a source and you can go, just run with it, right? And it might not even have been the case all along, but there are people saying out there that there's one job in particular in the NBA that Dan Hurley may be waiting on, and that's the New York Knicks, because he's an East Coast guy. Obviously, he's in Connecticut right now. It's not that far away. Could be the Knicks coach, and if that job would open up, that would probably be the one that he would leave UConn for. Again, that's nothing that's set in stone confirmed or anything like that. That's just something that some people have said that I read. Anything you read on the internet is true, right? Okay, maybe not. Dan Hurley is not going to the Lakers, though. He is coaching UConn. He said in a statement released by the school, "I am humbled by this entire experience. At the end of the day, I'm extremely proud of the championship culture we built at Connecticut. We met as a team before today's workout, and our focus right now is getting better this summer and connecting as a team as we continue to pursue championships." The offer by the Lakers would have made Hurley one of the NBA's six highest-paid coaches, but before opening talks with the Lakers, Hurley already had an offer from UConn to become one of the highest-paid NCAA coaches, and those talks will continue. Hurley signed a six-year, $32.1 million deal with UConn after the 2022-23 season. Had the option of taking over one of the most famed franchises in pro sports, but decides to stay at UConn. He's gone 68-11 over the past two seasons, winning the national championship. He'll try to become the second program to win three straight men's national titles. UCLA is the only one that has done it with a better record. They won seven NCAA championships in a row from 1967 through 1973. Governor Ned Lamont of Connecticut is happy that Dan Hurley is staying in Connecticut. I think everybody at UConn is probably happy he's staying in Connecticut. So think about that. Six-year, $70 million deal is what he could have got from the Lakers. He's on a six-year, $32 million deal currently from UConn. That is over double what he makes from UConn. But again, there'll be negotiations. Dan Hurley's probably going to get another raise from UConn here during this offseason, and we'll be fine. Let's just put it that way. So with this, though, the Lakers are still looking for a head coach. And like I just said, the draft is not far away. Free agency will start at the beginning of July. The Lakers are still trying to find who their new coach will be. They went 47-35. They finished seventh in the West last year. They were beat out in the first round of the playoffs and fired Darvin Ham after just two seasons. Here's the thing. When you're going to fire a guy, probably like try to figure out if you have somebody that might be in line that wants this job. You know, J.J. Redick has been reported that he was going to be the Lakers coach, and then that was not true. A lot of people just kind of thought that Dan Hurley was just going to leave. I never felt like it was going to happen. You know, they waited all the way until yesterday to officially announce that he's staying at UConn, Dan Hurley did. I never thought it was going to happen, to be completely honest. This is the first time I've actually had kind of the forum to say that as just me hosting the show, but I don't know. It didn't feel like the right fit for Dan Hurley. And I don't know. I never really thought that was going to be happening or that it would be the case. So, a lot out there. The Lakers resuming their search, and they'll continue to bring in previous candidates likely. Pelicans assistant James Borrego, Celtics assistant Sam Cassell, Nuggets assistant David Adelman, and J.J. Redick would probably be, one that might be interviewed and talked to. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The Lakers are one of two teams that have an opening right now as a head coach. J.B. Bickerstaff was fired after a 48-34 year, fourth in the East with the Cleveland Cavaliers, eliminating the conference semifinals by the Boston Celtics, who are probably going to win the NBA Finals. I'm going to say probably. I still think they're going to win. They're up 2-0. Things could change, obviously, but they do have the advantage right now. Bickerstaff led the Cavaliers to a winning record in three straight seasons, fired after following last year's first-round loss to the Knicks, and then a seven-game series over the Orlando Magic and a quick exit to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference semis. But again, it was the furthest they've been without LeBron James for years upon years upon years upon years for the Cleveland Cavaliers. But hey, got to get rid of the coach. You didn't do enough. You went 48-34, made it to the conference semifinals for the first time in ages without LeBron James on your team, but whatever. Time to go. Cavaliers, candidates could be Knicks associate head coach Johnny Bryant and Miami Heat top assistant Chris Quinn. Golden State Warriors assistant Kenny Atkinson, Pelicans assistant James Borrego also on the Cavs list. We'll see how that all plays out. Jobs that have been filled: the Wizards hired Brian Keefe, the Suns hired Mike Budenholzer, who was fired by the Bucks after just a year after winning a championship, and the Suns fired Frank Vogel just after one season. Mike Budenholzer is the head coach for the Phoenix Suns. Charlotte's filled their spot with former Celtics assistant Charles Lee. And the Brooklyn Nets have hired Jordy Fernandez, former Kings assistant, replacing Kevin Ollie, who was an interim coach that replaced Doc Vaughn in February. So those are the spots and jobs that have been filled. But the Lakers and Cavs, interestingly enough, the last two teams that LeBron James has played for, there's really no connection. I just decided to shoot that out there. Especially now that LeBron's been gone from Cleveland for quite a bit now, this second time around. But Lakers and Cavs are still looking for coaches, and I would not want to be a fan of a team that is still looking for a coach a week and a half before the draft. Probably need to get that figured out if you're the Lakers and Cavaliers. I don't want to go in the draft without a coach. Now, you got general managers that can make those picks for you that are there and in place. And Cavs, Kobe Altman, the general manager for them, and then the Lakers general manager, Rob Pelinka, who was, interestingly enough, both of them were hired in 2017 by those respective organizations in the NBA. But they have that leadership as far as general manager in place, lead executive or whatever it might be. But they don't have coaches, and I would not, again, want to be going into the draft and free agency without a coach to kind of be like, hey, yeah, you can pick this guy, but I think for my system, this guy might fit better. And you don't know what system you're running. You don't know who you're playing for. It's difficult to draft. I'm just going to say that. You can go get somebody, and then, oh, you're going to get a guy that might be like a better defender or not necessarily a scorer or something like that, and then he's going to play in a very up-tempo, fast-break type offense and just won't be able to fit in. I mean, you got to figure out who the coach is before you can draft. That's just all there is to it. And so Lakers and Cavs are definitely on the clock here. And we'll need to get a coach soon for both organizations. Dan Hurley, again, saying no, who will stay with the UConn Huskies. And, yeah, Lakers, you're on the clock. Cleveland, you're on the clock. My Spurs are not on the clock, so I'm happy about that. NBA playoffs, again, the finals will continue tomorrow night. We'll have a preview of Game 3 with the Celtics and Mavericks. But until then, that should wrap it up here on the Sports Ticket today. Brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. Hope you have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.